Welcome to today's episode of Fire in the Belly. This is where we get to hear some pretty inspiring stories from some amazing people. You know, it's always an absolute pleasure to sit down, take time out, and have a warts and all conversation about their journey. I'm always intrigued by what it's taken for people to get to where they are today. And hopefully, in this interview, we get to hear some more about that. From this, my mission is to help people to find their own fire in their belly, and from that, to live the mightiest version of you. So without further ado, sit back, relax, and enjoy today's guest. Success is a process, not an event. Good morning and welcome to the Fire in the Belly show. Today we have myself, Mighty Paint, and we are joined by the Gail Berry. Good morning, Gail.
Good morning.
Oh, listen, absolute delight to have you on here today, and been looking forward to this. I've been quietly following you in the background, and you're very active. So tell us, Gail, who are you? What do you do, and where are you from?
Ooh, that's a big question. Who am I? Wow. Let's start with the biggies. So I suppose in a nutshell, I'm Gail Berry. I'm a mum of three. That always comes first. I'm the founder of Blossom and Berry, which is a global teacher training organisation teaching the power of love and connection to parents and babies across the world. I also have a bit of a side hustle that I do business mentoring, particularly in the parent and baby wellness space. And I'm also a charity founder as well. My charity is in Malawi, and we create sustainable development projects around farming and education.
Wow.
So you asked the question, there you go.
You're a lot of things. You're a lot of things. You're a busy woman.
I am a multi-passionate entrepreneur. I think that's the official label that you could put on me.
Are you who you're supposed to be right now?
Ooh. I think I'm transitioning, actually. I've had lots of different episodes in my life, and I definitely feel that I'm going into another one, which, you know, as we chat, we'll probably become aware of the different seasons that you have in your life. But yeah, I think I'm always growing, constantly changing and evolving. And that's part of the reason why I love entrepreneurship, because it is the perfect vehicle for that transformation.
Mm. And talk to me about love. What does love mean to you then?
Talk to you about love. So, well, love really is at the heart of everything that I do. And I think it came from actually falling madly, deeply in love at first sight with my daughter, Emily, 20 years ago when she was born. Because I'd never held a baby before in my life. The first baby I ever held was actually my daughter, Emily. And so it was a bit of a kind of make or break moment. And the midwife popped her in my arms. I looked at her beautiful blue eyes, and I just instantly fell in love with her, and also in love with myself as a mother, because I think that's where everything that I do comes from, the sort of recognition and understanding that I'm a deeply nurturing person, and I love nurture, and obviously love is an extension of that. And so everything that I've been gifted with in my life seems to come from an opportunity to nurture myself or others in some way.
Love and connection, one and the same, or are they separate?
I think that's an interesting question. Love is, you know, complicated. I think, you know, we have so many different types of love for different types of people, experiences. Connection, I feel, is something that we can all hold. We're all connected to each other in some way. We don't have to necessarily proclaim love to feel connection to somebody. Connection, I think, is that resonance of alignment between your values, somebody else's values, and also seeing yourself reflected in another, and acknowledging and accepting them, and them doing the same for you. And in that sort of space that you create around connection, I think you can experience love. So, yeah.
Interesting. How many different types of love then do you think there are? A rough guess, maybe.
Well, I think there's sort of motherly love, like there's that nurturing type of love that you might have for family. You know, there's kind of like loyal love that you might have for animals and you know, that maybe like colleagues as well. You can have that. Then you have, you know, unconditional love, which is like the holy grail, which I think we all kind of maybe working towards, but is is, you know, quite elusive, actually. I think even in situations where, you know, you think of parenting and your love for your children as being unconditional, I still think that unconditional love is something that you have to work on all of the time. Love is exactly, you know, what it feels to each individual person. I think that's the point. There's no rules. It's just an energetic resonance with somebody.
It's a beautiful way of looking at it. I like that. You know, it's that sort of, it's the default factor, right? It's the default state, or it should be, hopefully.
Yeah. I mean, I'll tell you what it isn't. It's not Valentine's Day.
Really? Lots of chocolates and a bunch of flowers, no?
Well, it can be. That can be, if that's your love language. I mean, that's very, really interesting. And fantastic book is, you know, talks about the 5 love languages. And this can be really crucial, you know, in all relationships. If you're not communicating your love language, we all understand and receive love in different ways. So if if you're someone that likes to receive gifts and you don't receive gifts, you may feel that you're not loved or seen or heard or accepted, or, you know, you don't have that connection. But if you're someone who enjoys acts of service, for example, then if you don't have those, I mean, that could be something as simple as someone making you a cup of tea in the morning. I know that's something that I really value, and a sign that someone loves me, because, you know, everyone knows that I wake up every morning and have a cup of tea. So if someone's brought me one, I feel very loved. it's as simple as that. Maybe I'm easily pleased, but...
Are you easily pleased? I don't know. You tell me.
I am, actually. I'm a fairly simple girl. I enjoy the simple things in life, really. I think that's where the magic is. That's where the beauty is. You know, as humans, we like to make things very complicated. But, you know, there's simple things that we can do every day that bring us joy effortlessly. Yeah. You know, like, I love spending time in nature. Like, connection is really important to me. You know, interacting with other people, you know, breathing, moving, eating well, like all of these things that we know and actually just need us to be more mindful with our time. How are we using our time? Are we directing it into areas which bring us joy, or are we sort of like mindlessly doing things like hands up, you know, scrolling on social media is a great one. Doesn't add really too much to your life. Can do in small doses, everything in moderation, but, you know, I think simplicity is important.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned joy there. Do you think, is joy a choice? Is joy a choice? Is it something we choose to be?
I think so. I think, you know, enjoy, the concept of enjoying something, it means you are in joy. You know, you recognizing where the joy is around you, and you either cultivate it yourself or you go to those places where you can experience joy. So for me, I have a real dichotomy in that I love nature, I love adventure. I'm a real like barefoot hippie, love camping, but I also love culture and ballet and art and music and like putting my high heels on and going to Ronnie Scott's. So for me, I look to what kind of joy I want to bring into my life, because there is a lot of enjoyment everywhere. If we're open to see it and receive it.
Oh, wow. So tell me, what does fire in the belly mean to you, Gail?
Fire in the belly is passion, would be passion for me. Yeah. It's the kind of unwavering commitment to a vision that holds meaning to you.
Is it something you have? Something you've always had?
Yes. Well, not something I've always had, because I started life as a project finance lawyer in the city, and I definitely didn't have fire in my belly about that one.
it was a left turn taken somewhere that shouldn't have been taken.
Yeah. Like, I think that was like, you know, mum and dad and teachers saying, oh, you're really clever, you should go and do the law degree. And just sort of ended up there, and then got a fantastic job offer in the city. And then before I knew it, I was working in the city. Very sort of unconsciously, as you do in your 20s, you just sort of go with the flow. And I definitely didn't have any fire in my belly there. I was very disconnected from myself and everyone around me and my subjects as well. In fact, very interestingly, I used to have a very bad blushing complex. which if anyone's listening who follows me on social media will see, I'm on social media all the time. Like I teach online, I'm always sharing. I feel very comfortable like sharing now, but back in the day, if anyone asked me a question, I would just blush really quite like severely. And then obviously when you start blushing, you become aware of that and then you blush more and then it goes round, round, round. Yeah. And really it came from a sense of being completely unauthentic. So when I was asked a question, I was always thinking I'm going to get caught out here because I'm not a lawyer. I don't want to be a lawyer. I'm not interested in being a lawyer. I don't really care about my subject. I sort of blagged my way through my degree. Because I had a bit of a photographic memory back then. So I didn't really know my stuff that well. I didn't really like where I was. So, yeah.
I mean, you mentioned there sort of saying going with the flow. I mean, was it the flow or was it just you're going with external flow? It's, you know, you would be good at this. You should apply to this, blah, blah, blah. So it's an external influence. Do you think it was that or?
Yeah, I think I had very much like a good girl mentality back then. A bit of a people pleaser. And also when you're 20, and I think I was, how old was I when I got a job offer in the city? I think I was 21. And when someone says to you, you know, would you like a job in the city and your starting salary, you know, this is like back in the day. Okay. This is like 1998. So it's not really comparable, but at the time, I think I was 21 and someone said, would you like a job? And the starting salary is 40 grand.
Yes,
you know,
please.
Exactly. You know, you're like, okay, yeah, that sounds pretty good, you know, and I get to work in the city and you're going to pay for law school. So I think a lot of that was just, you know, me in that system of, you know, school, university, get a job, work in the city, get married, have kids, get a mortgage, which is basically kind of like one side of my story. But then I decided to take a bit of a wild card direction and not continue with the law. So.
Do you know when your blushing started? Can you pin it down?
It was as soon as I turned up at work in the city. Didn't have it until then. It was literally, I know exactly what it was. It was just a complete inauthenticity. It was awful. Wow. So, yeah.
It's mad, isn't it? It's amazing how the body will sort of tell you and let you out whether you want it to or not.
Well, I'm a terrible liar. And that sort of tells you kind of, that's the point, you know, my body, like I was going, yeah, sure, I got this. Like, but my body was actually saying, no, you haven't. So, yeah.
Oh, wow. So, I mean, what did you want to be when you grew up? What was the original plan way back?
That's a really good question. No one's asked me that for ages. So actually what I wanted to do is I wanted to direct Hollywood films.
Direct? Why direct?
Which I haven't done at all.
yet.
Well, I do spend quite a lot of time on screen and I do love creating. I suppose I do, I kind of have my own little Hollywood movies in my online courses. You know, I do use a lot of video. Like video is my medium. I'm not an author, you know, I'm a writer. Like I do have my own podcast and things like that, but that's not what I gravitate to. I'm very much a visual video based person, so yeah.
So it was always on the creation side.
Yeah, that's, I'd had my human design done recently and I'm a generator. I can't stop creating. If you leave me alone in a room for a day, I will come to you with some new crazy business idea, charitable project, something. It's just my innate nature to want to create. And it used to be when I was a kid, like I'd spend Sunday afternoons like making things for my mum. So I'd like spend all afternoon like making a card for my mum or something like that. And then I'd get loads of joy out of that. But now it's about entrepreneurship. Like I really see entrepreneurship as such a catalyst for connection, for contribution, for building community that, you know, I really, really love it. I'm not a workaholic. Because I also really enjoy freedom and I love travel, but I think entrepreneurship is just like the most sexy thing in the world.
And tell me this, would you rather fix something or rather make something brand new?
That's such an interesting question because I literally talked about this the other day. I literally said, I'm always a creator. I'm not an analyzer. So I will always take action and move forward rather than perhaps pause and reflect. Now, that obviously it's good to have those things in balance. I would say I am slightly out of balance because I am much more in the creation mode. I don't really like data and analytics and things like that. And I've learned as my business has scaled, I actually need to have those people in my business, because to grow a successful, sustainable business, you have to have both. But my genius zone is 100% creation and generation.
Wow, okay. And your flow state, where would we find you in your greatest flow state and creating state?
Well, I love writing online courses. I love recording online courses. I'm a complete geek about like neuroscience for babies. So if you left me alone, I tend to read like nonfiction books in my geek subject most of the time. If you left me alone and said you can do whatever you want, and it was summer, I'd be at a festival dancing with no shoes on in a field. That would be flow state for me.
With a laptop on the side, creating courses.
No laptops, no phones, not when you're at the festival. That's freedom.
I just think if you could merge the two, the creating and the dancing, it's like, yeah.
I think I may have done that on a couple of lives at some point, but largely the one can distract from the other.
Mm. Yeah, trying to be present. Is being present big for you? You know, do you know yourself? Are you able to be at one with yourself?
Yeah, I think so. Like I'm a bit of a self-development junkie. So I've always done self-development. I trained as a clinical hypnotherapist quite a few years ago. Like I've done life coaching and things like that. And I've always got a book on the go related to personal development. But I think in recent years, I've moved away from, say, like business and entrepreneurship as such into more like spirituality as well. So I like to blend the two, because I believe that, you know, your energy actually is what affects everything around you. And as an entrepreneur, you know, we talk about that fire in your belly. That fire in my belly comes from the energy that I hold within myself that allows me to then share that out. And so that means, you know, getting present and looking after myself, being mindful about what I do, who I'm with, boundaries, that sort of thing. Like, I'm not saying I get it right and I don't do it all the time, but it's something that I work towards, I strive towards.
Isn't it funny how you sort of, you have to, you know, find out what you're good at? You know, I mean, how close are you, do you think, between who you are today and your true self? I mean, is there a gap or are you one and the same?
I think with Blossom and Berry, I definitely am. You know, completely myself. I really embody what I teach there. So our mantra is love creates love. So, you know, what I've been doing for the last 20 years there is I've been teaching the importance of self-love. So if parents can love and honor themselves and meet their own needs, then they have a greater capacity to love, honor and nurture their babies and meet their babies' needs, which means that babies understand that honoring, nurturing and honoring, asking if your needs to be met is actually the foundation of self-love, self-esteem and mental health. And then we're growing a society of humans that have those values and embody them. So the work that I do is really, really powerful there. Like I used to say, oh, I teach people to become baby massage and baby yoga teachers. And I thought, no, I don't. I don't do that at all. I teach people to teach love. You know, because in every class, you know, I've got 2,000 teachers across the world. In every single class, we hold a safe space for parents and babies to come together, to build connection with themselves and each other and with the other members of the community, to build community. And in those safe spaces, that's where, you know, you empower people to honour their own needs, their instincts and all of those things. And it's that authenticity again, really. If you can't be true to yourself as a parent, it's a very, very long time to pretend to be something that you're not. And in the end, it's going to catch up with you. So I'm very much about, you know, speaking your truth, honoring what you need, even if it's difficult. And it is, because there's quite a lot of parenting guilt out there. But I still believe that if it's true for you, you have to express it.
Mm. So many questions there. But I mean, talk to me. I mean, parenting guilt there came up on a, talk to me about that. I mean, is it the guilt for themselves or is the guilt from the child? Where does the guilt come from?
I think it's a lot of like cultural kind of pressure on what it's like to be like a perfect parent. There's so much shoulds, there's so much comparison on social media. There's a lot of like different sort of sections of motherhood and fatherhood as well, or you know, people who identify as mothers and fathers. So you know, there's that sense of you lose your identity when you become a parent, and then you have to find yourself, which is not an easy task to do that. You know, it's the question you asked me at the beginning, who are you? It's not that easy to know that. And then once you kind of know who you are, whilst you're caring for somebody else and not sleeping very much and, you know, recovering from having a baby, you've then got to go out and find, you know, your people. So you can get that support, because we're not designed to parent in isolation. We're not designed to parent on our own. There's a whole idea about allo parenting, which is actually that you don't parent like in a kind of bi-parent situation where there's a mother and a father. Parenting is actually shared throughout the whole community. And in many societies and cultures around the world, that's favored over the traditional way that we parent. So, you know, it's really, really fascinating. And also there's a lot of like shaming around parenting, because, you know, being a parent, babies bring joy and happiness. Okay. They're amazing. They change your life, but they also are hugely triggering, and they bring up really difficult emotions. Like if you've maybe not had a great experience as a child yourself, having your own child can really trigger you. If you don't, you know, if you're not confident in your ability as a parent, you can have a nasty inner critic in your head 24/7 saying, oh, you should have done this, or you should have done that. Relationships get strained, you know, the lines between men and women and parenting responsibilities, they're all constantly changing and evolving. So it's not straightforward. You know, and going back to that idea of simplicity again, that's why, you know, what we try to teach is that when you connect with your baby, when you're practicing baby massage or baby yoga, you create a little love bubble. And in that love bubble, you've got everything that you need to create a bond with your baby. So you have touch, you have oxytocin, which is the hormone of love, you have eye contact, you have smell, you have sound of your voice. So those things have been, you know, scientifically proven to ground us into the moment, into our bodies, into what's real, and connect with our babies, which is the essence of love. And so when we go into our heads, we can create all kinds of stories about parenting guilt. I'm this, I'm that, I should be doing that. What did that person do? Is my baby doing this? I shouldn't be doing that. I better Google this because that doesn't look right, and this, that. And you know, all of that is in your head. And so what we try to do is bring parents into their hearts, because it's through the heart space that you connect. And it truly is magic. You know, it is actually magic. If there's such a thing as magic, that is it.
I love that. I mean, it's almost like an overarching switch that says, if you achieve this bit, all the rest of it will filter down. All the rest of it will sort itself out, right?
Yeah. Like if you've gone through the day, you know, and everyone's eaten and no one's like disappeared or got lost, you all like went out for the day and you all came back in one piece. Like that's goals, you know, anything else that happens is, yeah, great. It's amazing. But, you know, the point is children don't value the same things that many adults do. Children don't see or understand or appreciate so many things that we think that they should, in inverted commas. You know, children understand physical contact, they understand presence, they understand energy, they understand movement, they understand play. These are the love languages of children, if you like. And so to really, you know, connect with our children and resonate with them, we have to become a little bit more childlike ourselves. And that means, in my books, coming out of your heart, your head, and into your heart, because most children are heart coming from a heart space.
Do you teach children, or do children teach you?
My children teach me all the time. Especially now they're teenagers, I'm learning a lot. Some of it I don't want to know. I think my children have always taught me. I mean, Emily's my greatest teacher. She gets very embarrassed about this. Like, we did an event on Saturday in London, and she was there helping me. She's 20 now. You know, I'm on stage and I'm sort of saying, you know, and I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for my amazing daughter, Emily, who brought me this gift when she was born, and she just blushes and wants to run away. But no, Emily has taught me everything. I mean, if Emily hadn't been a very colicky, you know, unsettled, fussy baby, I never would have gone to a baby massage class. If I'd never gone to a baby massage class, I never would have gone, wow, like this is the thing. I never would have left my job as a lawyer, could still be there, you know. So when she came, she, like I said, she helped me understand what my true purpose in life is, which is, you know, to nurture parents and babies through my network of teachers.
Mm. Is that, do you feel you're in your calling? Is this your thing?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's an interesting story around this. Don't know if you've got time for me to share this, but
sure, please.
I actually went to South America after I qualified as a lawyer on a sabbatical, and I was in a really dark place, and I didn't want to go back to work and start my job as a lawyer. And I was getting really desperate, and it was before mobile phones and, you know, Google. So I used to go to like internet cafes and sort of try and look for another job that wasn't a lawyer. And it was, yeah, I was like really counting down the days to going back. Anyway, one day I just saw a beautiful, beautiful sunset. And I just thought to myself, you know, there's got to be more to life than what I'm doing. It just doesn't feel right. And I went back to my room. And I literally got on my hands and knees and I just sort of padded it over, basically. And I just said, you know, whatever it is that I'm supposed to be doing, I just really need you to help me, like my higher power, whatever you know, God of my understanding. And I just said, you know, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, you take the wheel, basically. That's what I said. And then within 5 days, I had a happy accident and I became pregnant with Emily. And then literally from the moment I became pregnant, I just knew that was it. It was very strange. Not the same for all women, but literally I knew I was pregnant before I was pregnant. As soon as I was pregnant, I just was like, this is it. This is it. This is the main show we're on now. And that was the trailer. This is it. And and then I went on to have my two boys. So I had three children under 3 and a half, which was fun. It was fun, actually. It was one of the, talk about simple times. That was one of the most simple times of my life, was when I was at home with my kids the majority of the time, because all we did was get up, you know, play, go outside, eat, sleep, repeat. That was it. Didn't have to go anywhere, do anything, talk to anyone. No one particularly wanted me for anything. And I just really absolutely enjoyed it so much. The most sort of, one of the most happiest times of my life was at home with my three. So.
Well, just, I suppose that connection. I mean, to me, you just described a pandemic where everyone's sort of at home connecting, eating, sleeping, you know, but that's the thing. But there's so many people, it's interesting. There's so many people with children. It is survival, right? It's sort of that level, but there's a very fine line between surviving with joy and surviving with panic or anxiety, right? It's, you know, one, to get through the day is a goal and achievement in itself. And two, then to do it, what intention you go in with, I suppose, maybe is the right way of putting it. Is that fair?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's literally every single person is different. And this is one of the things I really advocate at Blossom and Berry. There is no such thing as vanilla flavored parenting. Let me just repeat that. Okay. There's no such thing as vanilla flavored parenting. It doesn't matter what anybody else is doing. It's the one, for some reason, it's the one time in your life that everybody seems to think that they can have an opinion on what you do. And that, you know, that there's these standards or developmental phases that we have to hit, or, you know, it's just artificial, in my opinion. You know, we all eat at a different time, we'll sleep at a different time, we all want to move in a different time, in a different way. Like, that's freedom. And I think that sometimes when you feel those cultural restraints on you or societal pressures to do XYZ, I think that contributes quite significantly to parenting anxiety and stress. Because if you just left a parent in the middle of nowhere with their child, I think they would probably enjoy it way more, because that all they would be doing was being present and just doing things, the doing things of life. It's when we think, oh, you know, on Monday I've got to go to Tumble Tots, on Tuesday I need to go to swimming, on Thursday, you know, Wednesday, it's that. And we're investing in that because to some degree, There's joy in those things, don't get me wrong. But as long as it comes from a place of joy and not from a place of, I must do this because then my child will be smarter, clever, fitter, healthier, more in inverted commas, well-behaved, more likable, all of these things. Because what are we actually teaching children from the beginning with that behavior? that we have to do things all of the time to feel like we're worth something, like we're important. You know, the fact of just being, just sitting outside and kicking a can around or throwing stones in the city, like that isn't necessarily seen as a useful, productive activity. I really like that sort of thing. but you know, it's really tough being a parent in this culture. I'm talking from the UK personally. There's so many changes, so many challenges. I think it's really important to honour that. So when, if you're finding it difficult, don't be ashamed to say that. It is it's like the biggest job that you'll ever do, and most people aren't necessarily ready, you know.
That's very true. But that's the thing. I mean, there's very little training comes with it as such, you know, but the training kind of has to come from within. But yet we all sort of seek, whether you get it or seek it, you know, the advice or the, you know, from outside, right? And that can be good, bad, or indifferent, right? It's all different levels.
Yeah, and I think the more you know yourself, the more you trust yourself, the more you become that more authentic style of parent. And, you know, everyone's in a different place on that, and there's no judgment on that at all, because you can only be the parent of the person that you are or were before you started. And that means you come with all your triggers and your traumas and the things that irritate you. Like, you don't suddenly, when someone gives you a baby, become Mary Poppins. And then go, okay, yeah, like, I don't get irritated by, you know, a 2-year-old who won't put their shoes on. Of course you do. Like, but it's how you then, how conscious you are of your behavior and how much you might be projecting your own things onto your children or what they're, you know, they're watching you. That's the bit, that's the tricky bit. Like, you know, you're allowed to have all of the emotions. It's then just being mindful of owning what's yours. And also just taking a break when you need to.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I was, before I came on this call, I was negotiating with one of my 2-year-old twins and the 5-year-old. Both weren't in the mood for negotiating on a Friday morning. So it's like, yeah. It's like, how much, what other ammunition have I got in my pockets to trying to get what I need here, you know? So, kids, yeah. They'll bring you to the edge and back again, but. No, it's fabulous. It really is. What was Minnie Gale like? What were you like as a child then?
So I was quite shy. I spent quite a lot of time on my own. I actually spent a lot of time inside. Like, I love the outdoors, but yeah, I was quite a solitary kind of child, actually. I'm a bit of a fantasist. So I used to watch lots of black and white old movies on Sundays. That was back to back on like BBC Two. I remember you could just sit there all afternoon. I'm not like particularly close with my brother. I've got a brother, but I didn't used to sort of kind of, you know, hang out with him too much. And I've always had a small circle of friends, rather than being like the most popular girl. I was really bullied when I was at school, so that was quite a difficult experience as an early teenager. But you know, I've learned lots of things from that. So yeah, like, I think I had a very creative childhood, I suppose. But I create this, where maybe it comes from. I like to, if I'm on my own, I can always find something to amuse myself. I can always create some sort of fun of some description, even if it's like singing to myself or making up a poem in my head, or, you know, something, looking at, daydreaming out the window. Like, I'm easily pleased. So
what's your earliest conscious memory?
That's of my brother being born in hospital. I remember being taken to see him in a very 1970s, I can think of it, a 1970s ward. yeah, that's my earliest memory.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's amazing the things that we pick up, isn't it? Yeah, what age were you then? What's the age gap between you?
I would have been almost 3, I think.
Yeah, that's good. Tell me this, bit of a random question. Have you been here before?
Have I been here on this planet before? I don't know. Don't have a sense of that, to be honest. I don't really care if I have, actually, because I'm here now. Like, I'm very much a present moment person. I don't try to know what's coming too much in the future, and the past is gone. So, you know,
yeah, it's amazing. I mean, and for you, I mean, because you come across, your language is very kinesthetic, you know, you're very feeling, touching, doing, you know, that's is that a fair statement?
Yeah, I'm a kinesthetic person. I'm also a visual person as well. And I suppose that's why I really love what I do, you know, because I'm teaching about presence and physical connection largely. And again, you know, humans overcomplicating things. When we are present with our human beings, just by being present with humans, other human beings, our bodies actually start to regulate our emotions through things like eye contact, physical contact, you know, hugs, 10 seconds of a hug, your body starts to come out of, you know, fight or flight mode and back into rest and digest. You know, we do a lot of thinking of how we should be, but actually when we're just present in our bodies, I think that's where the answers lie.
Why do we come out of that connection? I mean, that, you know, the simplicity is almost the deceptiveness of it. It's like it's really not complicated. We don't need technology or anything complicated. But how did we go so wrong, if that's the right way of putting it?
I think it's because we have a lot of expectations placed upon us, and we put expectations on ourselves of what we should be doing. You know, we live in a doing culture. I really, really believe that, like an achievement, performance culture. You know, we're always evaluating, is this good or is this bad? There's always this, you know, the press is there to tell us what's good, what's bad, you know, teachers are telling us. So we sort of lose our way from that natural resonance of our hearts, of what, you know, our passion is. And somehow we just end up in our heads, because our head is more like the ego space. And we've all got an ego, because that's part of being human. There's no point in saying that you haven't. But the ego kicks in when we feel like we're in fear, or that we're being threatened, or we're anxious, or we're living in the past, or we're living in the future. Whereas as children, we start off, we don't care about those things. All we care about is, wow, there's a giraffe. Look at that. You know, like that's the joy. That's what I talk about joy. I suppose I'm just a big kid, because I probably still would go, hey, look at that giraffe now at 47. So, you know, anyone who knows me would actually say that about me, that I am a very excitable young lady of 47.
But that's like child wonderment, isn't it? You know, they just wonder at amazing things. It's like just seeing it for the first time.
I don't know. I really do appreciate life. I've been given a huge amount of things. Like I said, when I got down on my knees and I said, you know, you can take the wheel, I really believe that I have received so much. Like everything I have been given is a gift for me to share. And I do believe, you know, that I'm directed by, you know, a higher power to teach love, and to create the transformation through my teachers. I couldn't do it without my teachers. Like it's complete co-creation. And that's what life is, co-creation. If you look in nature, it's co-creation everywhere. It's one person sharing with another who is in alignment with that person, who goes, yeah, I like that as well. Okay, let's do something about it. And then that energetic resonance grows and grows. And that's the energetic resonance of love. And, you know, I've been able to flow that out into my charitable work in Malawi. And, you know, when I sometimes think to myself, like, how did that even happen? You know, like my Emily is 20. She says, Mum, I don't know if I want to do this job. I say, good. Because you're 20. If you absolutely knew that you wanted to do this job for the rest of your life, I maybe might be quite worried, because it's the first job you've ever done. So, you know, I always say to her, I was 27 before I even had an inkling of what my life was about. So just take that first step to the thing that is in greatest resonance with you, that puts that fire in your belly. And if it can't be through work, do it outside of work. Because we can't always have the luxury of, you know, finding that thing first of all, but then make the most of your weekends, your evenings. So, yeah.
Take us through that sort of timeline there. So, I mean, you were in the job that physically was not doing you any service. Enough was enough. then really what was it, the child or when you went away, then what sort of happened to trigger this change, if you like?
So I was in my job. I was 26 when I got pregnant. So that was the big change, you know, but becoming a mother 100%. And then I started teaching baby massage and baby yoga locally in Essex. And I did that for a few years. I got confident. And then I started to teach people to teach baby massage and yoga at a school in London. But then that wasn't in alignment with me. So I created Blossom and Berry, which is my own teacher training company. And I literally, it's so funny, like I used to teach people before online learning. So I used to send out ring binders and burn seat DVDs, and people used to post me their like work back. So I've always worked online, which is really interesting. Well, not online, but, you know, distance. So before there was Teachable and Kajabi and everything like that, it was just like good old fashioned, like DVD burners. So I did that for a few years, and obviously that resonated with me because my children always come first. So as my children were growing, my business was slowly growing, but then year on year it started to grow more. I started to do more work overseas. I have a branch in Dubai in the Middle East. Then I started a sister site in Mexico, started to do training in Mexico, went to Africa, started my charitable projects about 10 years ago. And now we have over 2,000 teachers across the world, 5 international branches. And, you know, we're sharing back with lots of different charitable projects as well across the world. So in the space of 20 years, as my children have grown, so has my business. And I always say to people in my community who are like eager to achieve success in inverted commas, success is enjoying your life and having the freedom to choose what you wish to do. So, you know, if I had got this success in inverted commas I have now when my children were 6 months, I would have had a nervous breakdown because I couldn't have been present with my children and enjoyed my children at that stage because my business would have been too big. So I'd never pushed my business. I just showed up every day and went, right, now what are we doing? Okay, now what are we doing? Now what are we doing? And the same with my kids. Okay, we're teething. Now we're potty training. Now we're going to school. Now we've got a boyfriend. I'm getting on a plane to go traveling around the world. Goodbye. You know, I'm like, that's how I roll with everything, really. So
well, what is your overall ethos then? I mean, is it let it roll and so the right thing will happen? I mean, what's, if we were to sort of say, here is Gail's doing guide, you know, what would we read?
Not doing guide. This is Gail's being guide. Well, you can't see what's on my wall, but basically I have a planner on my wall, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And it just says, have fun, you know, in every section with no actual tasks.
Love it.
So, yeah. So I think I'm possibly a little bit maverick on that side. I do have an online business manager, Lindsay, who is amazing, who, you know, having a team has enabled me to actually operate in my genius zone, which is this sense of playfulness and fun, because I have the people that actually their skill set is Excel spreadsheets and, you know, getting this out this time. So, you know, that's been a real key investment for me is my team. I wouldn't be able to do or enjoy my life in the way that I do if I didn't invest in other people and see their skills and help them to grow them.
So really, I suppose it sounds like it's getting out of your own way or discovering the things that maybe just aren't in your zone of genius and just finding somebody else that where it is their zone of genius and just time to buddy up and let them be in theirs and you be in yours, right?
Completely. So, you know, that'd be my advice to any entrepreneur. As soon as you get any spare cash, start to remove the things in your business that feel heavy or feel difficult or suck your time and energy, because you are so better placed doing the things that are in your genius zone. Definitely. I didn't do that for a very, 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 very long time. I've only really started to build my team properly in the last 3 years. So for 17 years, I was sales and marketing. I was distribution and packaging. You know, I was every single person in my business. And then I was like, no, I need to do something about this.
Is that a life phase, do you think? Because, I mean, there does seem to be you know, when you get sort of 35, 40, 40 odd, you know, you get to the stage when the weight of life almost becomes, and you described it beautifully earlier, and I'm probably not going to be able to repeat it properly, but it's that, you know, the weight of doing the things that you aren't supposed to be doing becomes too great that you start to let it down and you say, listen, I can't carry that anymore. You know, it's actually time to let somebody else. And I don't really care anymore. There's so many things that you carry as well that, for, you know, for others, if you like, or beliefs or whatever, you can say, listen, enough's enough. That's not me anymore. I'll let it go. Is there that break point, that turning point in our lives, do you think, where we decide to just own us, be us, to be who you are?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, one of the big moments in my life where I really felt that was when my husband was 39, my ex-husband now, he had a stroke. Completely out of the blue. We were literally sitting on the sofa and he keeled over and started having a seizure completely out, you know, spontaneously. And he actually had a very, very rare form of stroke, which came out, you know, just was just totally unexpected. He'd run a marathon about 2 days before. So he's a very fit, healthy guy. And I remember being put into that blue room, you know, in casualty, where when you get put in there, you're not going to get great news because, you know, you're just waiting because your loved one is there having resus or whatever. And I just remember pacing around that room just thinking to myself, I can't believe this is happening to me. Like, it was a real wake-up call. At the time, you know, my children, I'm going to be a widow, and I'm like 35, and I've got 3 kids under 6. And and that moment I really realized, like, don't waste your life. Like, anything can happen. Like, earlier today I was just walking around Waitrose, you know, buying fish fingers, and now, you know, my husband is had a stroke and is, you know, being resuscitated. And so that massively has, I think, enhanced my sense of joy and wonder for life, because I felt like something, you know, which was catastrophic almost happened to me and my family. My husband recovered, he did have brain damage, but you know, it could have been so much worse. So, you know, that also has influenced me quite deeply.
What is it? Is it the fragility of life, or what sort of triggered you, and why?
It's just a complete lack of control that you have on everything. Yeah, you think you're in control. You're absolutely not. That's the thing. Like, just get up and do your thing on that day. If you had a good day, great. You know, because I know it's the biggest cliche in the world, but you could be dead tomorrow. But I mean, literally, that's kind of what happened to my family, is that, you know, my husband, that, you know, was very lucky to be alive. And it all happened in, you know, 60 seconds. So, you know, that is a bit of a leveler, that. Yeah.
Do you think, I mean, is that a message? Is that just life? What is it, do you think, or what way do you view those sort of incidents?
I think it was just life. I think everything happens for a reason. Well, if that's just because there is a reason for everything. It's not like some sort of strange, like, spiritual mantra, you know, everything happens for a reason. It's just everything does happen out of your control. You know, we often don't know or can't cerebrally understand what that reason is. But that's what I'm saying again, is that's our heads trying to work out, oh, why did this happen? Well, if I'd done this, would this not have happened? But ultimately, you've got no idea. It's just a story. It's just a meaning that you attach. Like, two people can see something in a completely different way. So the most important thing is acceptance of what's happening to you. And in that blue room, as I was pacing around, you know, it sounds awful, but a large part of my brain was actually going, okay, this is happening to me. What am I going to do? Like, what's going to happen? So less of my brain was like, oh, why is this happening to me? Like, I was less scared. I was more grounded in acceptance. And even afterwards, you know, I could have been very paranoid for a long time that my husband would have another stroke or a seizure or anything. But I was like, well, what can I do? It's my choice. I either live in fear of this happening again, or I just have to accept that it happened. And if it happens again, it's going to happen again. But nothing I can do about it can change it, you know.
I mean, what did those moments, and interesting because you're saying that, does it almost bring out the best in you, the creator in you, where you're saying that, you know, the small stuff just falls away and we now need to be in that zone of genius. You need now need to not in a, I'm not trying to belittle the situation more for one second, but actually it's a very focused and defining moment of saying we now need to do X, Y, and Z. You know, this just needs to happen, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what happens at that moment. It could have been like my mama bear instinct kicking in, thinking, okay, well, you know, I'm in charge now. I've got to do this, but I don't know. You know, it could have been something that I attached trauma to, like it was a difficult thing to observe and watch, but that would just be a story that I'd be re-repeating in my head. I choose to accept that that is what happened. So, yeah.
And with pressure, are you good with pressure? Or pressure for diamonds or pressure for unnecessary situations?
I'm definitely a last minute girl. Yeah, I absolutely like work very well under pressure. Like I was giving a talk on Saturday at my event, and I've been working on this talk with my coach for about 6 weeks, and I wrote it. And then it was just there, and I was supposed to rehearse it every day, and I was supposed to like pace around the house and do this, do that. And every time I picked up, I went, nah, I'll do that tomorrow. And I think it was in the car driving down to the event in London. That was the first time I just started talking to myself about it out loud. And that just felt right. I don't know why. It probably isn't right, but for me, it was right. And I delivered that version of that talk on that day. Maybe it would have been better if I'd practiced it every day. But I suppose that's the rebel in me. Like, yeah. But I'm trying to honor that spontaneous in the moment girl with also my, you know, something that I'd like to develop, which is a little bit more like planning and preparation, because you're good at something, it doesn't mean you can't be good at something else. And if you stay in that comfort zone of going, yeah, I can always blag it at the last minute, you could, you know, could do a talk that's 50% good. But if I'd done 6 weeks of prep, it could have been 100%. Do you know what I mean? So I'm constantly playing around with these concepts in my head of genius zone versus growth, you know, and just seeing what happens.
I mean, if we had to put a clinical label on you, would we be sort of pulling out the ADHD type one and sort of saying, yeah, you here, please own this one?
No, I'm not actually. I'm the opposite of that. I'm very, very still person. So I spend a lot of time I don't even know where I go. I look up and I've been off somewhere for hours. I'm a bit of an enigma like that. I love my own company. I love my own head. I like hanging out with myself. Even when I have thoughts that come up, I'm interested in inquiring as to where they come from. I do lots of things at the same time. And I am a very messy person as well. But I can always find something. You know, someone says, where's that thing from like 5 years ago? I can put my hand on it in like a sort of bomb site within a second. It's partly the reason why I'm not married to my husband anymore, because he's ex-army and I think I used to drive him absolutely mental. but, you know, now I live on my own. I can be as messy as I like.
That's a creative side. I'm recognizing a lot of these traits, by the way. So yeah, but that's the creative side, right? Because your main priority is in creation. It's like, yeah, the tidying up, we can do that later. That's fine. It's more, why stop me creating? It's like, I'm coming up with absolute zones of genius here, right?
You are talking my language. You are totally, you can come and play at my house anytime. Come and play after school next Wednesday.
Well, that's it, just to let you get out there, you know, and it's true. But I mean, I was sort of diagnosed as such with dyslexia and ADHD a couple of years ago. And it was more for my girls that I wanted to say, you know, if we needed to look out for them. But actually, do you know what? A hell of a lot started to make sense in my life, that actually all the things where I had compensated, I'm, you know, sort of above IQ as such, because I'm very visual and very creative. You know, I mean, my desk pads and all the rest, I'm like brainstorming all over the walls, you know, but like, and it's chaos. But then someone else comes in and going, it's chaos. But it's like, yeah, but I know where everything is. Please don't touch it.
Yeah. No, kindred spirit, definitely.
What, I mean, for you, if you are looking to create, are you quiet zone? Are you down to a festival? Are you stand in the forest or go to the shore? Where are you going?
I'm more of an introvert actually. So I'm a sociable introvert. I think that's what I would describe myself as. So I love people, but if I need to do something, I have to do it on my own quietly. And ideas come to me all the time. Like in lockdown, I would go for like, you know, what was it, your 60 minute exercise session you were allowed. And during that time, I was spending a lot of time in nature, and I came up with a concept called Tree Babies, which is a new course that we've been running at Blossom and Berry, which is about mindfulness, baby wearing, connection, and forest bathing in nature. And because I was outside and experiencing so much peace and connection and serenity, I was like, why do we do baby classes inside? Let's take babies outside into nature, because it's a sensory rich environment on every level. There's no plastic, there's no smelly church halls or anything like that. You know, you're outside in nature, connected physically to your parent, which is your safe space, and you're in nature, and parents are outside, you know, experiencing nature. And all of the research now about mental health and nature, you know, I don't need to go into it. It's really well known now about how nature naturally soothes us, and forest bathing, so much research about that as well. It's been used since the 1980s in Japan as a stress reliever. So I created Tree Babies, and we've now got 300 teachers since we launched it last year. And that's a totally different concept in parenting classes. Everyone's absolutely loving it. And again, with my style at Blossom and Berry, I never franchise, I never license, I never lock anyone in. You don't use my branding, you don't use my lesson plans. You know, it's all about freedom. So I give my students the ideas, and then they run with them and develop them. And it's an absolute joy to see all of the different teachers with their different brands doing different things in different parts of the world, adapting the essence of what I've taught, but with the complete freedom to authentically express themselves as teachers. So they never have to do what I say. They just get inspired by what I offer and then take it to their own place. And that's how I've run my business forever. So I suppose talking to you now has been it's like therapy, really, because I've seen quite a few themes of my life, like freedom, creativity, authenticity. It's all coming out.
It's not the first person to say they felt it was like therapy, but yeah. That's interesting, right? Because it sounds like that's all pleasure driven, right? So there's no pain. It's like, don't sign up and this will happen, you know, and you know, we've got you on the hook, but it's all pleasure, 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 which is beautiful. That's the point of creation, right? It's service and creation. It's saying, please join me. If you choose not to, that's okay too. You know, It is free will, right?
Yeah. I mean, maybe coming back to that first question you asked me today, what is love? Love is actually freedom, I think. Freedom to self-express, freedom to be, freedom to enjoy. You know, like we take freedom for granted so much in this country. Like having gone to Malawi and worked, you know, with some of the sort of most sort of economically deprived communities, where there's no freedom to turn on a tap, go to the toilet, you know, have a toilet in your house, have a bed, you know, have a fire, have warmth, have a blanket. Like that freedom is just not there. Like the basic, you know, human rights are not there in so many places around the world. So if you have those things, then you're enjoying a certain level of freedom that's not even afforded to millions of people around the world. So, you know, I think that experience of going and working in Malawi has also been another great leveler and another, you know, episode of my life, which really helped me to ground into what I have rather than looking for what I want or what I need, you know, just be grateful for the fact that all these things I do have.
Because it is always interesting, you know, whether people are pain or pleasure driven in general, because I kind of have this theory and, you know, you'll know from NLP and all the rest, people typically are pain driven, you know, and that unfortunately is our human bias, I think. So for you to choose to actually go the other way, it's quite strong in itself, right? You know, that sort of choice to be as opposed to, you know, has it always been that way for you? I mean, were you just born that way and saying, I always see the bright side of things? Or has that been a choice or a journey for you too?
No, I mean, that's what I say. Like when I was a lawyer, I was absolutely in do mentality, achieve, tick box, you know, 100%. But since I had my kids, I was like, you know, this is your charm scale. Like there's two eyes watching you. What are you going to do? Are you going to perpetuate and create perhaps what you've experienced? Or are you now going to make every single day as fun as it can possibly be? And I was like, hell yes to the second, because I'm going to really enjoy that as well. And, you know, my kids will tell you I am the biggest kid out of everybody. You know, like our summer holiday was me with a load of teenagers, them and all their mates. We climbed Snowdon. We're like making campfires. We're going wild swimming. Like, I'm there to the end because I just want to play with everybody else. Yeah, big kid, basically.
Have you been this person before? As in, you know, have you sort of connected back to your child? I mean, are you one and the same?
No, because my childhood wasn't like that. Like, I wasn't a sociable, you know, I was a very solitary child. But I'm always kind of like, you know, I have a very busy sociable house with my kids. And yeah, no, I mean, I would honestly say that that day of saying, take the wheel, and everything that followed from that one moment of my life, everything from that moment of my life has been in alignment. And I trust because of that, that whatever happens to me, it is being guided. And I never doubt, I don't doubt it. It doesn't matter about all of the things that happen that don't, you know, in theory are bad, if you want to label them like that. It's just, it's the path. And I have faith in that. I really do.
Where do you sit in regards to sort of spirituality, religion?
Yeah, well, I mean, I have a belief in a higher power, 100%, absolutely. Because, you know, basically higher power is love, and I teach love. So I have to hold hands with my higher power every day. So, yeah, I mean, I was, after I had Emily, I was born sort of into Christian religion. After I had Emily, I did actually go to church for quite a few years because I really felt that I had been given a gift or an opportunity from a God of my understanding. But actually the structure of, you know, going to church and formal religion, and, you know, some of the Bible passages can be a little bit challenging sometimes contextually. So I decided to like develop my own form of spirituality, which is a very, very strong, as I said, because I believe that, you know, whatever God you of your understanding, you have a relationship with it. All religions about, you know, the essence is love. And so it's that cultivation of love, that resonance of love, that is when we feel connected to something outside of ourselves, and we go from the me to the we. And it's the we, the collective consciousness, which I think people understand as a God, whether it's energy or Mother Nature or, you know, Buddha or, you know, whoever it is. So, yeah.
Mm. It's fascinating, isn't it? You know, how we, you know, go through that. That, and that understanding for you, was that at the time of, you know, having Emily, or was it all, is that where the change, yeah, and the perception of love and the understanding came from?
Yeah, wow. 100%. Yeah.
Talk to me then about the business side of things. I mean, where did that come? Because it'd be very easy to get caught up, I suppose, in the love side and the service and that side. But yet, you know, and as you're saying, there is mentoring in there. There's business, you know, there's a business entrepreneur spirit in there at the same time. Talk to me about that.
Well, I'm just a massive sharer, and, you know, I've learned a lot. And so therefore it just feels like the natural progression of that is to share. And I've also had a great experience in business. Like, I really enjoy business. Like, I have a lot of energy. And I suppose people comment, a lot of people say, oh, you know, how come you're so happy all the time?
Suspicious. So, yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, so I think, you know, I kind of wanted to help entrepreneurs who were feeling like that they were being bogged down by doing things that were not in alignment with them. So, you know, my business mentoring is, I can tell people, like, you know, how to do active campaign and set up funnels and all of that. Like, I do know all of that, but I prefer to talk about, you know, what is it that is the big vision, what's the dream, what's the legacy that you want to leave behind? Let's focus on that and then work backwards as to how you need to do that. But always keeping that in mind, because that's the passion, that's the fire in my belly that's kept me here now after 20 years. You know, I have absolutely no intention whatsoever of ever stopping doing this or retiring, or, you know, it's just not a it's just who I am. It'd be like retiring Gail Berry if I didn't do Blossom and Berry anymore. So, you know, my life goals is in the next sort of 5 years is to just sort of hot desk around the world and do a lot more philanthropy related to parent and baby wellness really around the world.
I mean, is there a power, do you think, in business world, if it's love led? I mean, is there a power there? Is that a game changer, do you think?
All businesses have to have love at the center. If you don't have love at the center, there's no point, because love is the energy of life. It's the resonance, you know, it's the thing that creates the connection. So, you know, there's a lot of you can take from the parenting world and put into business about how you actually, you know, your business is like your baby, you know, and how you treat your baby and your business is how it grows up and develops. And if you love your business and you invest in your business and you get present with your business and you look at what your business needs or your child needs or all these things, like, this is how it's not like we have to go to school to learn how to do this. Innately, I think we know how to nurture things to their full potential, whether it's a baby or a business. But somewhere along the line, it gets very noisy. And then we start doing lots of things and maybe forget what it was that made us want to do it in the first place.
It is. I mean, it's a game changer. Do you think that's common in business? You know, I know there's a lot of entrepreneur. I mean, we seem to be on the rise of the entrepreneur at the moment, and they do things because they want to. They, you know, they have a dream or passion or whatever way it goes. But in business in general, is it love led, or is it, you know, does it get clouded with, you know, sort of visions and missions and you know, sort of the trappings of, I suppose, business and wealth, really.
I mean, the key money there is it money or is it love?
Mm.
I mean, I don't know, because in my circles, I have to admit, I live in a bit of a love bubble over here. So I tend to attract people who are motivated by love. But largely, you know, if you go to the city, it's more about money. Mm. But the thing is, I believe that if you do something that you love, the money will follow. If you have that passion, it activates, because whether you say, you know, it's magnetizing, or I'm not sure where I sit on things like law of attraction and stuff like that. But, you know, if you are loving what you're doing, also you just enjoy your life, and maybe you don't need as much money to get all of the things that you think you need, because you're just in your life enjoying it. You know, like I don't have a great desire to have a bigger house or a bigger car or whatever. I'm just great. I'm just like, yay, I get to do this again today. Hey, great. You know, that's it. That's about it. And I don't have a connection particularly to figures, because again, another one of my weak spots is figures in my business. I have a really good accountant now, because I'm just there for the lols. I'm just there for the impact and the, you know, and then someone goes, well, we're doing really well this month. Oh, brilliant, brilliant. Or, you know, we need to do something like this. But yeah, I don't know. It's just, I just have an absolutely unwavering faith and belief in what I do. And I know that I'll always be okay. And I think that inner confidence, connected to the fact of how I sort of received my gifts and the fact I know I have this faith, means that I don't worry so much about those material things, because I can either up level my life or down level my life, or I can change, or I don't need it. I don't need any of these things. I don't have too many things. So I'm quite agile, you know.
Mm. Talk to me about your hesitation with the law of attraction.
Well, I like the concept of the law of attraction. However, when I went to Malawi, it was a real wake-up call, because there are people in Malawi that you could sit and, you know, try and activate the law of attraction and manifest as much as you want to, but you're still not going to have access to clean water. Your child is still going to die of malaria. Yes, of course, there are certain people who have, you know, maybe more of a fighting spirit to do more in their community or take an entrepreneurial path. But when I actually saw, you know, I think that this is a bit controversial, but the law of attraction works really well in Western developed countries. Okay, but when you are in a country where you have to survive on less than $1 a day, you know, sitting around with your vision board, or it, you know, it's not, that's not the reality of life. So I have a bit of a love-hate relationship with it from that point of view. It works in my life. And I do believe that energy, I believe that like attracts like. And I believe if you go looking and you're open to receive opportunities, you will, whatever your place is in the world. But I don't think it's a magic bullet. And I think that when we what we focus on manifests. So, you know, if you're constantly thinking about getting a white Mercedes, probably eventually you will, because you just spend all of your time thinking about that. But in Malawi, if you constantly think about having a borehole in your village to give you fresh, clean water, I'm not sure. I'm not sure that's going to happen, you know, and I've seen that with my own eyes. So, yeah, sorry, a bit controversial there. But
that's the world that we're all allowed to think differently, thank God.
Yeah. You know?
Talk to me about Malawi, that journey.
Yeah, so I'm always really cautious about talking about Malawi because I don't want to come across as like a white savior and, you know, that I'm like the hero of the story, because I'm absolutely not. I went to Malawi about 8 years ago. That's a really long story, and I'm not going to go there because it's really long. But basically I found myself there through serendipity. And I went to just go once when I was 40 to set up a training program for orphanage staff to learn how to use baby massage with babies in their care, because all the research shows that babies in orphanages have the least amount of social interaction and it fundamentally affects their brain development. So I was trying to find an orphanage, found one in Malawi, went to just go once, but basically fell in love with the two sisters who had started the charity called Love Support Unite, which was centered around an orphanage for 36 girls, and they were then starting outreach projects in the community, like education based projects and farming based projects. And so I said, can I perhaps work with you on a mother and baby health initiative? So I taught Malawian women how to become teachers in things like menstrual health, hygiene, infant mental health, early childhood development. And then those Malawian women set up their own groups with Malawian women. So it's no white faces with charity t-shirts, it's Malawian facing. And it really took off. Like I really felt very uncomfortable when I first went there, because obviously baby massage it comes from India. So we've already slightly, you know, appropriated it from India when we use it in the West. Like I do obviously reference it and all the heritage, but it's not a white Western thing, baby massage. It's used in cultures around the world, but fundamentally sort of from India. And then it's to take something to another culture and sort of say, oh, you know, you haven't got any food, but you haven't got any water, but do some baby massage. That'll be great. And I was really conscious of not being that person, because, you know, poverty is so complicated, and what we think we know about poverty and living in poverty as a white Western woman is completely ignorance on. I was so ignorant, it was just unreal, like literally embarrassing. I was just embarrassing. So I had to be very mindful of talking to Malawian women, seeing how they thought that this would benefit the community, and then working with them in a culturally appropriate way. But they absolutely loved it and made all the songs up, like cultural songs up about when I massage my baby's brain grows. When I massage my baby looks at me with love. And when I would visit once a year just to sort of do extra training, arrive at the villages and the women were all singing these songs, massaging their babies, and they would translate the words. And the words were like the theory that I teach in baby massage. So I sort of say, hello, everybody. So today we're going to learn baby massage. It's really good for helping your baby's digestion. And these amazing Malawian women were singing at the top of their voices, like, when my baby eats food, you know, it goes through their tummy and everything like that. And I was like, wow, like my work is done here. You guys have totally got this. Like you just take this wherever it needs to go, because I've sown this little seed, and then, you know, let's just see how it rolls. So yeah, lots of adventures in Malawi for sure.
Sure, it's a very proud moment,
it's not really pride, because it's not It's not, I don't own that project. It's not my thing. It's, I had an opportunity again to do something which is very radical. Like everyone said, why are you going to Malawi? You know, I just booked a plane ticket and just, I didn't even know the girls who ran the charity and I just went. And they were like, just, you're 40, just buy the shoes, you know, get the car. Don't, why are you going to Malawi? Like, but I just had this urge again. It was like this calling to go there. And it's completely changed my life. I mean, I ended up being the UK director for quite a few years alongside my business. So yeah, I mean, but I have nothing but gratitude for how that weaved together. And, you know, I'm able to now give back. I give back 10% of my baby massage projects to those projects to help those women out there, empower them through education, not aid, just to say there's a difference between aid and sustainable development. So we try to invest in projects that are sustainable as much as we can.
Do you know, and there's an ongoing theme I'm sort of picking up here. It's, you know, it's like the babies can teach you as much as you teach them. In fact, probably more, you know, and the same with this Malawi project is actually they're teaching you as much, if not more than you're teaching them, but it's a quid pro quo, right? It's a balancing of energy in some ways, you know, it's like they have a deficit and a surplus and vice versa. You have a deficit and a surplus. And if we can pass the energy, then the world is a better place. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, what I learned was how little I knew. That was the main gift that I got, was like, you know, it can be embarrassing, like white people going and volunteering, because it's not a vanity project. You know, it's all very well to go for 2 weeks to see, you know, yeah, help and then walk away. I mean, part of the reason why I love my best friends now who ran the charity is that, because, you know, Alice started the charity when she was 19 on a gap year, and she didn't walk away. She could have. She went on a 3-week, 4-week trip, but instead of walking away, she spent the last, you know, 10 years of her life raising over £100,000 to empower communities, because she didn't walk away. And one of the embarrassing things that I did when I first went there was when I saw these mothers that weren't eating, and they hadn't eaten for about 3 days, and they had walked about 10K to come to this baby massage class, and they were breastfeeding, and, you know, I was like, they were starving. So basically, you can't not eat for 3 days when you're breastfeeding. It's just terrible for you and your body, and obviously nutrition for baby. And so I said to Nina and Alice, I'm going to write a check for £5,000 for a feeding program. So everyone that comes to these baby massage classes at least gets a bowl of porridge. And they just said, no, we're not taking your money. And I was like, what are you talking about? I'm going to give you the money for this feeding program. And they said, absolutely not, because that is aid. And if anything happens to you and we set that up, we'll have all these people that are dependent upon you because you decided that you wanted to give £5,000 today. So we're not going to do that. And at that point I went, you girls are the real deal. So they said, what we're going to do is take your £5,000 and we're going to set up a cooperative farming project. So we're going to teach the women how to farm on this land. And it's going to take loads longer. It's going to be really painful to do. Everything's going to go wrong. You know, it's going to be horrific to manage, but it's got a hell of a better chance of still being here in 10 years' time than you just writing a check. And at that point, I just went, I'm so ignorant, and I'm so, you know, this is such a typical thing to do. Money is going to solve it. And from that was another big wake up call in my life. You know, and yeah, just so interesting, just so interesting learning from Nina and Alice and learning about sustainable development. Could bore you for hours on that one as well.
But it is beautiful, isn't it? I mean, and it's, that's the world over, you know, it's like, just because someone wants, you know, it's like, give, what's the usual saying? It's, you know,
give a man a fish and he'll eat for a day, give him a net and he'll eat for 10 years or something like that. Yeah,
but it's also, and the evolution of that is almost like, you know, people will tell you what they want, but you actually need to give them what they need, you know, and that's the difference, right? You know, because they need fair, but actually if you give them, you know, the need to learn how to sustain and to be able to look after themselves. And that's not just in other worlds, that's also in our world. It's like, it's all well and good saying, you know, I suppose you see it with the kids, you see it with everyone else, you know. Yeah. And I can't remember which. But
I think the important thing about that is, though, is not assuming, like when you're in another culture, that this is what people need, because this is also what I learned, is that, you know, you actually need to just work out what the actual need is that isn't the need that you assume from a sort of white privilege point of view or a charity worker. You have to just spend some time in that community. And that's what Nina and Alice did. They live there 6 months of the year, and we have a Malawian based project team. So it's largely Malawian people with Malawian people. So through learning about that, you actually have a better idea, you know, that if you give someone a cow, that's all well and good, but what happens when it dies? And that person's like given up farming their land because they're milking their cow. The cow then dies. They haven't got any food because they didn't put anything in for their harvest that year. Like, it's things like that where, you know, it's that being conscious of everything that you do. It's not coming from a place of ego or fixing. It's about coming from a place of co-creation. And don't get me wrong, that doesn't mean that we haven't got it wrong, because we have, and we have done projects where things haven't worked out, and we have, I'm sure, you know, stepped over the lines culturally on some occasions. But we try, when we do that, to learn from it fast and put our hands up. We're definitely not perfect 100%, but we are conscious and mindful as much as we can do, bearing in mind that we're a tiny, weeny, small grassroots charity, and no one comes from a background of, you know, sustainable development. Like I say, it was just Alice, you know, and she was 19, going, I don't want this to happen, and then just growing up around her. So,
God, the world would be a very, very different place if we just gave that sort of consideration.
Yeah, no, I have so much respect. Like, they are two of the most significant people that I've ever met in my life, and really cultivated this love, because they do, you know, I talked about unconditional love. They are two people that I do believe practice unconditional love. I have many stories of them, you know, where there's literally zero benefit from them doing anything, and yet they still act from a place of love. Yeah, incredibly inspiring. And they're now my best friends. So it's a happy story.
That's beautiful. I mean, and for you, where do you see this all going? Do you have a perception, or is it a case of just being the now and it goes where it goes? Well, or do you have aspirations of what you'd like to achieve?
Well, I like working in partnership with people. So I have an open door to anyone who's got like a charitable project around the world, and they want mother and baby or parent and baby wellness training, and they're working with vulnerable parents. Like, I'm starting a project in Haiti at the moment. I've got something that we run in Ghana. So yeah, like, basically, again, I'm a simple girl. If I put it out there, I offer it. Who is meant to find me comes and finds me in their own time, at their own pace, normally through Googling. And then when they come and present an opportunity, if it's in alignment, I largely say yes to most things, if it's in alignment, and we'll give it a whirl, you know, with boundaries. So I think really, same thing. I'm handed it over. I haven't got the wheel. Gave that wheel over when I was about 26. I haven't been driving since. I've just been in the back looking out the window, basically waving at all the giraffes going, hey, look at that.
If you were to come back as an animal, is giraffe top of the tree then?
Yes. That's my spirit animal.
It's isn't it phenomenal there that, you know, what we can achieve, and you know, I'm just in awe of that sort of ability to connect and stay open to it. And when you are making those decisions, I mean, are you intuitively led? Do you feel the energy around it? Do you see energy in other people? Or what ultimately is the sort of decision tree when, you know, there's an option in your life? You know, how do you decide?
It's usually, you know, if it feels right, it's a yes. The only thing that, you know, sometimes where I can go a bit wrong is I can underestimate how much time I have. So I tend to do quite a lot of things at the same time. So, you know, I can, you know, like I say, I was a UK director of the charity. I was running Blossom and Berry, and I was being a mum to three. But for me, that didn't faze me. But maybe if I was just being a mum of three, I'd be better just being a mum of three rather than, you know, maybe if I was a UK director, I was better at doing that all the time. But my life just doesn't seem to ever work out that way. I don't know. It's like, it goes back to that thing I was saying, is like you could be dead tomorrow. So if an opportunity arises where I think, like, obviously I've got no idea how to be the UK director of a charity, literally zero. But I was like, well, someone's got to do it. And so I better just try. And then I ended up sort of going around London and speaking on stages and running events, and the money started coming in and we're connecting with donors and the charity was growing. And I was like, oh, okay. So that's what happens when you say yes in there, you know? And obviously that meant that other things were slightly had less energy. My kids always have my energy, but my business in that phase definitely was, there was less momentum. And now I've handed that back much more to Nina and Anis, and I now very much focus on Blossom and Berry. And subsequently, that's now growing because, you know, it's the sunshine. When you shine the sun on the, or whatever it is you're growing, it grows faster. So, you know, that's sort of where I'm at, really.
Mm, that sort of focus is beautiful, actually, isn't it, though, that you can, you know, whenever we focus upon it, it's a lesson there, right? You know, you focus upon it, you focus upon a baby and the massage, and you take those moments of connection, you take those moments of support, and actually then the ripple effect, it'll ultimately change their lives, their, you know, really their journey, I suppose, as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's that great. Yeah. There's a greater, it is the ripples in the universe. You know, it's not, we won't always see that the results of the work that we do, but you know, yet there's a ripple somewhere. It's hopefully affecting someone. And, you know, wow, what a blessing to have.
Yeah, what a blessing. Well, that's what it's all about, isn't it? It's the transformation. I think that is what gives the most joy in life is, you know, knowing that you've created some kind of transformation. You've taken something that you were born with and you've used it for the greater good of us all. And you've relieved pain and suffering in some way, or you've brought joy and happiness. And I believe that all humans ultimately feel fulfilled, you know, experience fulfillment when we relieve pain and suffering and when we bring joy and happiness. And so if you focus on that in entrepreneurship, both sides, I believe that, you know, you every single day you have that sense of fulfillment because that's what life's about.
Mm. What's the nicest thing somebody could say about you?
The nicest thing that someone could say about me. I think a lot of people would say that I've got good energy. That's something that people say quite a lot. Yeah. I really love life. I really, really do. I'm really grateful for my life. I don't want to waste a second of it. So thus the 26 projects I run at the same time.
Are you sort of a 150 mile an hour, 100 or 50 mile an hour sort of a girl? There's not necessarily a nice steady average temperature. It has to be all or pretty much nothing.
I think I'm a steady sort of 70 miles per hour most of the time. I'm not 150. I've never been to 150. I don't even know what that looks like. But I haven't been below 50 miles an hour for quite some time. So I think I'm on cruise control at 70.
Jumping up the miles. I love it. Dylan, in many, 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 many years from now, what would they put on your headstone?
Gail Berry, she taught love.
Simple. Like it. Well, what's a bit of a guilty pleasure for you then? Take the guilt out of it if you wish. I don't mind.
Well, I love 70s disco, but that isn't really guilty pleasure. I mean, that's just like ultimate pleasure.
I'm now seeing like fluorescent stuff and roller skates. Is it, have I gone too far?
I've got roller skates. Yeah, totally. Now, guilty pleasure. What is my guilty pleasure? Oh, probably RuPaul's Drag Race.
Wow.
Love that. That's the only thing I binge watch. Literally, I don't watch television at all. I haven't watched television for about 2 years. And that includes like Netflix as well. But with my daughter, that's my guilty pleasure. We sit and we kind of eat chocolate and we watch RuPaul's Drag Race and we love it.
What's your go-to in the chocolate world?
Oh, it might be. Well, it depends what mood I'm in, but I do like a double decker.
Interesting. Controversial, but yeah.
The questions are good, like, the questions are really varied on this podcast.
I did say we're good places that, you know, most don't, you know. No, it's always great, you know. So it's, but and for you to reconnect to yourself, I mean, leisure and pleasure for you, where are you going? What's your sort of reconnection place?
Travel, nature, music, film, festivals. If I could do that every day, that would be perfect life with the people that I love.
And film keeps coming up again and again. I mean, you were film director was your first choice. We're talking about black and white films when you were a kid. So what's your go-to in the film world then?
Oh, good question. So, well, I absolutely love Life is Beautiful. I don't know if you've ever seen that film. It's an Italian film. It's absolutely amazing. If you're listening, okay, go watch that. Absolutely beautiful, beautiful film. I like subtitled films. So I like The Artist is another favourite of mine. I do like Gone with the Wind. Gone with the Wind and Gone with the Wind Sound of Music I used to have on repeat when I was a kid. So I like those kind of real old school Hollywood glamour kind of classics, you know, Gene Kelly and Fred Astaire and all the high production movies. But one thing, it's easier for me to tell you what I absolutely hate, because I do love all films, really. I cannot stand Marvel films. I cannot bear them. I absolutely, like, I literally can't think of anything worse of someone making me watch that. So I don't like anything that's massively CGI'd. If I want to learn from a film, like Brokeback Mountain is another one that I love. You know, anything where you have an emotional connection and you leave and you go, okay, you know.
So there's a rawness, there's an authenticity, there's an emotion to it. It's those core, it's got to be there. And don't overcolor it or else we're Gail sending out.
I don't want any CGI. And the CGI is a massive turn off for me. So, yeah.
Do you know what? What's that film? There was The Shawshank and then there was the other one. Oh, they did it in a prison. I've forgotten, and they put a dose.
Is it the Green Mile? Is it the Green Mile with Tom Hanks? Yeah.
Yes, but they put a dose of CGI in at the end when the flies were coming out of the man's mouth, and it destroyed the film for me. Sorry, it was right up there to that point, and it was like you could literally hear my heart hit the floor, you know. But anyway,
yeah. I also love anything with Leonardo DiCaprio in. I was having this conversation with someone the other night. It's like, Leo doesn't make a bad movie apart from Titanic, which is awful. But yeah, so I know I do love my films, as you can probably tell.
So Leo, if you're out there listening, yeah, there we go. Sort
of, I am a fan, yeah.
There we go. It's all good. So tell me, if you were to try and describe your fire in the belly in one or two words, Gail, what would they be?
That would be love creates love.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Where can people find out more, support you, track you down?
On Insta, I'm Blossom and Berry Baby Massage and Yoga. So, you know, if there's any parents listening who want to find out a bit more about like connection, touch, why it's important. My personal page, like where I do a little bit of like dabble around in a bit of business mentoring, is I Am Gail Berry. And my charity is lovesupportunite.org. And we sell amazing magic sunglasses to raise money for Malawi called Love Specs. And you can find those on Instagram as well. Haven't even had a chance to talk about those. That's another thing in my life that's to do with love. So you can also go and have a look at those. And maybe when you buy a pair, all profits go to our charity, and they are the best fun ever.
Wow. Okay. Love it. Thank you very much. Is there a final message you'd like to leave with our guest today?
Oh, well, no, it's just been really, really good fun. It's been really fun to share. And in talking to you today, I actually feel even stronger in the fire in my belly is even hotter. So you succeeded.
There we go. Perfect. That's what it's all about, right? That's what it's all about.
Absolutely.
Gail, you've been wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing. I really appreciate you and appreciate your time and sharing your journey. And may there be many, many more connections and love out there. So thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that was another great episode of Fire in the Belly. You know, this really wouldn't be possible without our great guests taking the time to share their personal journeys. And boy, oh boy, sometimes it is personal. It's an absolute pleasure to have that, and then to hear the journeys that people have been on. We've loads more episodes coming up soon, and it's always a pleasure to have guests on. If you do happen to know anyone with true fire in their belly, please reach out to us so we can share their journey, lessons and successes. So all that's left to say is have a great day, live with fire in your belly, and be the mightiest version of you.